Welcome to Northern Soundings, Alaska in Conversation. I'm your host, Robert Hannon. This episode, Ned Rozelle takes a walk down memory lane even as he strolls 800 miles.
These longer events have become popular, right? You're doing 100-mile skis, 100-mile runs. I've done a 100-mile run. I did the White Mountains 100. So if you did that every day, you'd be done in 8 days, right? So a different mindset. What do you expect? Because you've changed in that way.
I hope you'll stick around for the journey. 20 years ago, a young science writer at the University of Alaska Fairbanks' Geophysical Institute took off on foot from Valdez, Alaska, to follow the Trans-Alaska Pipeline north to Prudhoe Bay. He received permission from Alyeska Pipeline Service Company just days before his departure. For the next 4 months, Ned Rozelle forded streams, climbed mountains, avoided bears, braved swarms of mosquitoes, and met a diverse and quirky set of individuals who had property near the pipeline corridor. He wasn't alone. His sturdy Labrador retriever, Jane, joined him on the journey. Periodically, friends and family would hook up with the pair and walk a section of the 800-mile hike. His trek was captured at first in a series of columns and later in a book called, appropriately enough, Walking My Dog Jane. In 1997, when that trek occurred, Ned was 34. In the intervening years, he married Kristen, and they have a 10-year-old daughter now named Anna. By all rights, Ned should be a comfortably settled middle-ager, negotiating nothing more demanding than an easy boy. Instead, earlier this month, he took off from Valdez to retrace his path up Alaska, this time joined by a new canine companion, 3-year-old Cora, a lab healer mix. Kristen and Anna are also planning to share some miles with the pair. I spoke with Ned before he left. I wanted to know why he was hiking again a trek most of us wouldn't even tackle once.
A couple years ago, I was talking to Chancellor, who at that time was Brian Rogers, and he said, you know, you should do that hike again at the 20-year anniversary. It'd be interesting. And I never thought I would do it again. But since he put that idea in my head, I couldn't get it out of my head. It's like, huh, that sounds interesting. It was a good summer then, and perhaps it'll be a good summer now.
Do you have a canine companion you'll be taking with you?
Yeah, I do. It's our family dog. Her name is Cora. She's almost 3 now. And she's a little girl. She's like 38 pounds. She always sits on my lap, but really spunky, incredible energy. She is a lab blue healer mix. And I don't see much lab in her. She likes to chase around other dogs and herd them. She's a great little beast, really strong and energetic. She pulls like a Malamute.
Wow. Will she be schlepping her own stuff with like Jane did?
Yeah. I gave her a little pack on her back on a recent trip to Nugget Creek Cabin. She did pretty well with that. I'll be asking a lot of her because she weighs, like I said, about 38 pounds. And I think when her pack is full, it's going to weigh, 6 or 7. So that's a big percentage of her body weight.
Do you do any training to give you a sense about what's possible and what to demand?
For the dog, it's just sort of getting out. And the pack, we haven't done a lot with the pack, but it fits her very well. She just have to adapt to that on the trail. And I have thought, how much enjoyment is this going to take from her to carry this pack? But when she's worn it so far, she's been fairly oblivious to it, which is good.
I remembered in your first book, it was kind of down to the wire whether you had permission from Alyeska to actually hike the pipeline. Now, I'm guessing you're a known commodity now. Is it difficult this time to get the paperwork to hike it?
Not really. What I had to get was a right-of-way use agreement, they call it. So I gave a proposal to a guy there who's head of their right-of-way, and he got back with me and said, okay, yeah, you have to go check in with Alyeska Security. And I did, and they gave me a piece of paper. And basically, it gives me permission to be on the pipeline pad in my non-motorized walking way and have my dog with me, my wife and daughter occasionally, other friends occasionally, but not to go on private property, which there is a lot of, without asking permission.
Is there anybody at Alyeska or any of the operators from your original trek that are still around that would know you, or is it a completely new generation?
Peter Nagel is the guy who heads up the right-of-way for Alyeska, and he's the same guy. So I was surprised that he was my contact man.
So much of your first book, you meet these characters that live off of or by the corridor. Any of them still around? Have you kept in touch with them?
You know, I haven't. I'm not very good at that, but I'm curious to find out.
We often hear and have reported on things like climate change. Do you have a sense about how conditions will be different or the same as your last? Do you have any idea about that, Ned?
I don't. I have a lot of pictures from 20 years ago. Perhaps I can compare some. What changes in 20 years? Yeah, trees change. They get a lot bigger.
And brush.
Yeah, maybe brush appears where it wasn't before. Will I remember that without a photo? I don't know. Will I remember certain campsites? Maybe. Yeah, 20 years is a long time, though.
It is a long time. In 20 years, equipment changes. What are you keeping? What are you taking with you?
You're right. Things have changed quite a bit. And even then, I was trying to go light, but I look now at photo of my backpack, and it was heavy. You know, when I got a week's worth of food, it was probably more than 60 pounds. There have been a lot of gear improvements since then. Things have become lighter, like titanium stuff. There wasn't so much titanium pots, but titanium is a very light metal, and I think I had stainless steel last time, which is not light, but is really rugged and durable. Stoves, they've come quite a way. Canister stoves can be very light now. I also have a stove that takes twigs. I'm going to experiment with that in the interior where I think it's feasible. Twigs that are like 2 inches long. Like if you find one spruce tree with dead branches on the bottom, it could fuel that stove and boil water for you. So hopefully I won't be carrying fuel canisters for at least the interior part, which is a lot of this.
You try to get sponsorship and whatnot. Have you been working on the same thing? And is there any equipment that you're taking that you're kind of excited to try out?
The first time I did it, I had a lot of sponsors. And this time I thought if I could go without them, it would just be sort of cleaner. You wouldn't feel beholden to anyone. But that said, I just tried some Alaska-based freeze-dried dinners on a cabin trip because I saw them in Beaver Sports, and I bought a few, and it's a company called Heather's Choice out of Bird Creek, Alaska, south of Anchorage, and they're really nice, compact meals that you just add water to, and really good stuff, like a smoked salmon meal that's just delicious and packed with calories because they have a lot of coconut oil and coconut flakes in their meals. So they have breakfasts and dinners and snacks. So I asked them, and they've agreed to give me a few. Also, my first sponsor 20 years ago was the Sevilor company, and they make, among other things, little rafts. So I got a trail boat. I got two trail boats from them, and they were the first things I received. And that kind of psyched me up because it's like, wow, I'm really going to do this 20 years ago. But that was before alpaca rafts came out, which is kind of the standard now in tiny rafts. You can carry in your backpack, and they only weigh about 5 pounds, and you can take them on really rugged waters. So this route crossed Alaska. It crosses 34 major rivers. Most of them I will avoid by walking around on bridges or over bridges, but some I won't be able to. So I've asked Alpaca to loan me a raft for those parts, and yeah, I think they may be on board, too.
Well, how about Ned? What have 20 years done to Ned?
Well, 20 years older, right? I was 34 then. I'm 54 now. I don't know. I'm still...
pretty active.
Pretty active. Pretty healthy, thankfully. Yeah, pretty amazing. No aches and pains. So I feel like I'm ready physically. I mean, sleeping on the ground every night, I haven't done that in a while.
Endurance.
So when I did this 20 years ago, what do you think my mileage average was, Robert?
Eight.
Good guess. It was six. Yeah. But since then, these longer events have become popular, right? You're doing 100-mile skis, 100-mile runs. I've done a 100-mile run. I did the White Mountains 100. So if you did that every day, you'd be done in 8 days, right? So a different mindset. What do you expect? Because you've changed in that way where you're used to seeing a lot of miles go by every day in some activity you're doing. That was the kind of the point of that trip, was kind of to spend the whole summer out and do it slowly. 6 miles a day seems pretty short, a 10K a day. But remembering back, it was like, that was what I wanted to do. You know, you stop at a creek side, take your boots off, let your socks dry out, pump some water, filter it, and get back going slowly, you know, sleep in, go to bed late. Will I be a bit more mileage conscious this time? I don't know. But it's certainly been a change in mindset since, probably the mid-90s, where people are just doing longer stuff, and it's sort of expected, you know? My friend Jeff Oatley rode his bike 1,800 miles plus in a month in the winter, you know, doing 100-mile days several times, you know, during that trip. And you look at his tracker, and you can almost see him moving while you're watching the screen. It's not going to be the case with
a little
my
pressure
tracker.
There.
Yeah.
I remember Bob Baker, when he was talking about his skiing, he said, it's not so bad once you just get it in your head that you get up, eat breakfast, and ski for all the day, and then break, and then eat dinner, and then go to sleep. Once you get your head around that, it's pretty easy.
Yeah, I was a bit more, I was just slow, you know, and walking's a pretty slow activity. And yeah, my wife and my daughter will walk a lot faster than I do. When I walk with them now, I lag behind them quite a bit, maybe just because of my stride or whatever, but I'm pretty slow.
Mm-hmm. Are any of the people who were on your trek 20 years ago joining you in the field again?
I hope so. Yeah, my brother joined me for ways through the Alaska Range. He didn't make it in the book. My editor cut him out. Bitter about that. No, just kidding. And a friend of mine who hiked 200 miles with me, he lives in San Francisco now. He broke his ankle in March, but I'm hoping he can make it off the disabled list, at least by the end, to make it up here, because he's still a great friend of mine. And he shared 200 miles of the 800 with me last time. And also my friend Andy Stearns, who shared some time with me in 1997. He's going to be out there with me again for some periods of this.
You were also single then. You now are a family guy. How has that worked? Do you think that'll be I know you talked that they'll join you on parts, but there's got to be a part that'll miss that.
Yeah, for sure. My daughter Anna is 10 now. She's as old as my dog Jane was when I did that like 20 years ago. And I thought, boy, there's a good symmetry. Does she want to do it? I don't know. But she's the kind of kid who she kind of comes alive outside and when she's moving. So I'm looking forward to getting her out there and sort of sharing that and just doing something she might remember later on. Even if she's not totally jacked up to do it right now, I think maybe later she'll look back and see a really good summer. Yeah, and I'm really looking forward to getting out there with her and Kristen, my wife, just to share it, because it's pretty cool. I mean, people think, my God, why would you want to do that? And part of me says that too. I mean, you're not really in the wilderness. You're kind of on this industrial type corridor, but you're going through some amazing country, and you take a few steps off, and you don't camp on it usually. You just find a great spot to camp, shut down, and you're outside, and it's quiet, and you're in a beautiful place, and tomorrow you're going to do the same thing. It's just it's a nice pace for a summer.
This is Northern Soundings. I'm your host, Robert Hannon. My guest today is Ned Rozelle, a science columnist and author of Walking My Dog Jane, from Valdez to Prudhoe Bay along the Trans-Alaska Pipeline. Ned is in the process of retracing that 800-mile hike he made 20 years ago. I asked him if he was starting at the same end of the pipeline as last trip.
I'm going from Valdez to Prudhoe Bay, just like I did last time, because starting up north now, it's pretty wintry on the North Slope right now still, which would be great for skiing. I love to ski. But somewhere along the way, that's going to break up, and it's not going to be very fun for quite a while. On the other end, reaching the North Slope at the end of the trip, hopefully it'll be past the time of peak mosquito hell up there, because that's a bad place to be when they're peaking. It's a bad place for humans and caribou to be. And last time I hit that pretty well, just kind of got there when it was cool and a little rainy, but there weren't many mosquitoes.
You also wrote columns. Will you be filing from the field again?
Yeah, I will. I'll be writing my regular weekly column I send out. It's a job I've been doing since 1994. And I did it 20 years ago. I sent back sort of columns on what was going on along the way. So yeah, I plan on doing that again.
So when you're out there, how will you file your columns if you're in the middle of nowhere?
Yeah, first go back to 20 years ago. How did I do it then? There was a store called Computerland in Fairbanks. And they sponsored me with a little, call it a palm top computer. It was about the size of a paperback and had a little keyboard about a little bigger than your hand. And I would just type with one finger onto that. And the great thing about it was it took AA batteries. So to charge it, all I had to do was get some new batteries in a food drop or whatever. To send those columns, I would have to find a telephone. Unclick the phone line in the back, click it into my little palm top computer, and it had a modem in it, and it would send it.
That's pretty sophisticated for back then, I'm guessing.
Yeah, 20 years ago. And it worked great, and this thing was very light. And as I'm looking at my options today for sending columns out, it's like, what do I need? I need a decent keyboard and a decent computer to compose into, and I need a way to send it. So I did purchase, my wife and I have been wanting one of these for a while, a Garmin inReach device, which also has a GPS and color maps in it. It's pretty nice unit that allows me to send text messages from anywhere on Earth, basically, and allows people to track me also. And through the Geophysical Institute website, we'll be showing a little arrow where I am. I said I'll send a message once a day or so, I guess. So with this, I'm able to send text messages, but they're limited to 140 characters, so... Can I send columns that way? Maybe if I send a lot. I haven't quite figured this out yet, a week before I leave here. But I also, I'm bringing an iPad mini, which I do most of my writing on now. I don't think I'll bring the keyboard. It has a keyboard on the screen, which I think will be adequate. But there I'll either have to look for a place, like a lodge or something along the way with Wi-Fi to send, or have a cell phone along that could act as a Wi-Fi hotspot when there is cell coverage. And there's not much along the whole route. Like from Valdez to Fairbanks, there's a big gap in there in the mountains where there's no cell coverage. And then north of Fairbanks, north of Haystack Mountain, basically, nothing all the way to the oil field. So that's 400 plus miles there. So I'll have to figure something out up there. And it's not as simple as it was 20 years ago, believe it or not. Plus, that palm top computer I had took double A's. I could just carry batteries. These devices, like an iPad or this inReach, or perhaps a cell phone, I have to plug it into AC. So I'll have to find somewhere to recharge occasionally, or I'll have to bring a solar charger that will somehow do the trick. And I'm not sure how well that'll do and whether it'll be worth the wait, which I'm really conscious of course.
Because of course.
The less you bring, the happier you are.
That's right. Simplify, simplify, simplify.
Yeah. And so sending back is not going to be simple as I like it. In 20 years, it'll be really simple because you'll be able to send everything through a satellite, probably pictures, as much text as you want, your video, whatever you want to do.
That's probably right. Well, and I'm thinking in some ways, Ned, it's counterproductive because we'll be able to track your progress and we'll expect these texts, daily texts. So in some ways that maybe not hermit-like or recluse-like quality about your first trip will be somewhat compromised here, because in some ways you will always have in mind those people you're either trying to communicate with or thinking about or filing this and that more so than last year, last trip.
Yeah, good point. Yeah, it does get lonely out there occasionally, and I'll sort of have control of this communication also, you know. So you can get away with it pretty quick. I mean, get away from it. Yeah, and that's a big thing too. You know, in this world, it's harder to get away from it. And along this route, you know, where there's no cell coverage from sort of the middle Alaska range and then all the way north of Fairbanks, all the way to Prudhoe Bay, I mean, that's not going to be the same fairly shortly too. I mean, everywhere is going to be connected, whether we want it to be or not, right?
Right.
This is Northern Soundings, Alaska in Conversation. This episode, Ned Rozelle is my guest. 20 years ago, he and his dog Jane hiked the length of the Trans-Alaska Pipeline. He's repeating the trip this year. Ned pens a popular column, Alaska Science Forum, and from his first trip, he wrote a wonderfully engaging book. I continued our conversation by asking him about his writing.
You know, I have to ask you, we talked about your columns, but the skill set for writing columns is different from writing a long book. Did you enjoy the process of writing the book? How does the form inform your writing?
Yeah, that was really fun. Last time I did it, right after I finished walking the pipeline in late August, I took a leave from work of about 6 months. And then I sort of drove around and revisited people I had met but didn't get to dig deep enough with as I was just there for a day or so on my hike. And I interviewed them and sort of made that into a book. And I remember that being a really fun time.
Having filed all this information in your head on these columns, you have a kind of a wealth of detail. There is the landscape you have in front of you, but you have another layer, a virtual reality of knowledge and experience. How does that play when you are in the situation? Are you operating on two levels at any given moment?
Yeah, well, I'm 20 years older. I've written hundreds of science columns since then. So, yeah, that stuff, you know, a lot of it's in my head, a lot of it left my head. But when you see something, you could probably make that connection. Oh, did I write about this before? And what detail is it about, you know, white-crowned sparrows when you see them doing something interesting or something? And perhaps that'll be there, perhaps it'll be gone, you know. I won't have my Google brain out there either to review what I've forgotten. But yeah, you know, I've lived in Alaska 30 years and sort of have chosen this place. And in, 23 years of writing about it in detail, I've learned a lot about it too. Yeah, so maybe this trip will be another opportunity to learn more about it and to kind of reflect upon.
Well, yeah, and one of the nice things that I found in your book and also, for example, Matthew Sturm's Finding the Arctic, in some ways, people inform the landscape just as much as the fauna and the flora and whatnot do. Do you find that to be the case, Ned?
Yeah, for sure. In Alaska, the miners, you know, they're going to be plentiful along this trip, especially up north. People like Jeff Schultz, who I ran into around Delta 20 years ago, you know, his story of hitchhiking up to Alaska and getting jobs around the pipeline era and making a living as a carpenter after that. Yeah, just all these parallel stories and what drew people to Alaska and what keeps them here. Freedom's a big part of that. Probably still is.
Well, I think of Daryl Farmer's Bicycling Beyond the Divide, another narrative that kind of he, after a period of time, retraces his thing. And so much of his book, of course, is the interior landscapes altered so much and writes about that. Do you think that'll be elements in your, I presume you're going to write another book from this experience.
Yeah, we'll see. First book, it was evident I was going to write that pretty quick after probably about a month or so of that 4-month hike. Yeah, I don't know what to expect, Robert. I'm sure a lot of things will just zing back to me. Stuff that's in my head, I don't even know it's there right now, triggered by images that I remember.
I'm sure.
Yeah, and a lot I won't remember.
Well, you know, I think finally, just talking about form, the travel narrative has such a sturdy kind of structure to it. You know, you start in A, you end up in Z, and what happens in between is what keeps us moving along. Do you ever feel hampered at all by that kind of construction? Have you ever thought, Ned, you know, there's a great novel about this that I could go with these fictional characters and explore these elements, but since so much of your science reporting in your past book is really just mines deeply the character and nature of what you see before you, I wonder if you ever thought about branching out in a different way of handling that material.
Yeah, I mostly relate to nonfiction. That's most of what I read, too. I have written fiction, though, sort of unpublished, a book that I wrote when I was a park ranger in Yukon Charley Rivers National Preserve, just about this guy back there sort of living on the sly out in the park and getting away with it for quite a while. And the park characters, all some sympathetic with this guy and some just trying to get him, but not being quite able to. Yeah, so I've delved into that. But yeah, I think my head is sort of a nonfiction head.
Well, Ned, I just wish you the best. And you have an invitation when you get back to come back on and sort of talk about what you experienced. Well, Ned Rozelle, author of Walking My Dog Jane and so many science columns, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you, Robert.
That's it for this week's show. You can find links to Ned's book and columns on the Northern Soundings website. Until next episode, I'm your host, Robert Hannon. Thanks for listening.